If she heard me, it didn't show. She sipped water, then continued, as if desperate to finish, to get the taste of the words out of her mouth. I wanted to leave him. I knew he'd be furious, but I couldn't let the children stay close to him. I tried to talk to Jenny about it. She took matters into her own hands. My little sister, trying to protect me. She went to Victor and told him that if he didn't let me leave, she'd go to the police and to Johnny Marconi. She'd tell them all about him, and he
killed her, I said.
Hell, Victor hadn't needed any of Jennifer Stanton's hair to kill her. Any kind of sample of bodily fluids would have worked. With the ceremonies of lust that he'd been holding, he'd have ample opportunity to collect from poor Jennifer Stanton. Maybe he'd even had her bring him a sample from Tommy Tom. Or maybe Jennifer and Tommy Tom had just been too close, as they were making love, for the spell to affect just one of them when he killed them.
He killed her,
Monica confirmed. Her shoulders slumped with a sudden weariness.
That's when I came to you, because I thought you might be able to see, be able to do something, before he hurt my babies, before he killed somebody else. And now Linda's dead, too. And soon you, Mr. Dresden. You can't stop him. No one can.
Monica, I said. She shook her head and curled up in a miserable little ball.
Go, she said. Oh, God, please go, Mr. Dresden. I don't want to see it when he kills you, too.
My heart felt like a lump of cold wax in my chest. I wanted so badly to tell her that everything would be all right. I wanted to dry her tears and tell her there was still joy in the world, that there was still light and happiness. But I didn't think she'd hear me. Where she was, there was nothing but endless, hopeless darkness, full of fear, pain, and defeat. So I did the only thing I could. I withdrew in silence and left her to her weeping. Perhaps it would help her start to heal. But to me, it only sounded like pieces of glass falling from a shattered window. As I walked toward the front door, a little motion to the left caught my eye. Jenny Sells stood in the hallway like a silent wraith. She regarded me with luminous green eyes like her mother's, like the dead aunt whose namesake she was. I stopped and faced her, I'm not sure why.
You're the wizard, she said quietly. You're Harry Dresden. I saw your picture in the newspaper once, The Arcane.
I nodded. She studied my face for a long minute.
Are you going to help my mom?
It was a simple question. But how do you tell a child that things just aren't that simple? That some questions just don't have simple answers, or any answer at all? I looked back into her two knowing eyes, and then quickly away. I didn't want her to see what sort of person I was. The things I'd done, she didn't need that. I'm going to do everything I can to help your mom. She nodded.
Do you promise?
I promised her. She thought that over for a moment, studying me, and then she nodded.
My daddy used to be one of the good guys, Mr. Dresden, but I don't think that he is anymore.
Her face looked sad. It was a sweet, unaffected expression.
Are you going to kill him?
Another simple question.
I don't want to, I told her, but he's trying to kill me, and I might not have any choice.
She swallowed and lifted her chin.
I love my Aunt Jenny, she said.
Her eyes brightened with tears.
Mama won't say, and Billy's too little to figure it out, but I know what happened.
She turned, with more grace and dignity than I could have managed, and started to leave, and then said quietly,
I hope you're one of the good guys, Mr. Dresden. We really need a good guy. I hope you'll be all right.
And then she vanished down the hall in bare, silent feet. I left the house in the suburbs as quickly as I could. My legs drove me down the oddly silent sidewalk and back to the corner where the cabbie was waiting, meter ticking away. I got into the cab and told the cabbie to drive me to the nearest payphone. Then I closed my eyes and struggled to think. It was hard through all the pain I felt. Maybe I'm stupid or something, but I hate to see people like Monica, like little Jenny, hurting like that. There shouldn't be pain like that in the world. And every time I run into it, it makes me furious. Furious and sad. I didn't know if I wanted to scream or cry. I wanted to pound Victor Sells' face in. I wanted to crawl into bed and hide under the covers. I wanted to give Jenny Sells a hug and tell her that everything would be all right. And I was still afraid, all tight and burning in my gut. Victor Sells, of the shadows and demons, was going to kill me as soon as the storm rolled in. Think, Harry, I told myself. Think, damn it. The cabbie gave me an odd look in the rearview mirror. I stuffed down all the feelings, all the fear, all the anger, into a tight little ball. I didn't have time to let those feelings blind me now. I needed clarity, focus, purpose. I needed a plan. Murphy. Murphy might be able to help me. I could tip her off about the lake house and send in the cavalry. They might find a stockpile of Three Eye there. They could then arrest Victor like any other drug dealer. Oh, but there were too many holes in that plan. What if Victor wasn't keeping his stores in the lake house? What if he eluded the police? Monica and her children would be in danger if he did. Not only that, what if Murphy didn't listen to me? Hell, the judge might not issue a warrant to search private property on the word of a man who probably had a warrant for his own arrest out now. Not only that, but the bureaucracy involved in working with the authorities in Lake Providence, on a Sunday, no less, would slow things down. It might not happen in time to save me from having my heart torn out. No, I couldn't rely on the police. If this was any other time, if I was held in less suspicion by the White Council, I would report Victor Sells to them and let them handle the whole thing. They're not exactly soft on people using magic like Victor used it, to call up demons, to kill, to produce drugs. He had probably broken every law of magic. The White Council would waste no time in sending someone like Morgan to wipe Victor out. But I couldn't do that either. I was already under suspicion, thanks to Morgan's narrow-minded blindness. The council was already meeting at sunrise on Monday. Some of the other members of the council might listen to me, but they would be traveling now. I had no way of reaching any of those who were sympathetic to me, no way of asking for help. There wasn't time, in fact, to try to round up any of my usual allies. So, I concluded, it was up to me, alone. It was a sobering thought. I had to go confront Victor Sells, as strong a practitioner as I'd ever gone up against, in his own place of power at the lake house. Not only that, but I had to do it without breaking any of the laws of magic. I couldn't kill him with sorcery, but somehow, I had to stop him. Odds seemed really good that I was going to get killed, whether I tried to face him or not. To hell with it, then. If I was going to go out, it wasn't going to be while I was lying around moaning and bitching about how useless it all was. If Victor Sells wanted to take out Harry Blackstone Copperfield Dresden, he was going to have to shove his magic right down my throat. This decision cheered me up somewhat. At least I knew what I was doing now, where I was going. What I needed was an edge, I decided, something to pull on Victor, something he wouldn't expect. Now that I knew who he was, I understood the magic I had run into outside of my apartment a little better. It had been potent, deadly, but not sophisticated, not well controlled. Victor was powerful, strong, a natural mage, but he wasn't practiced. He didn't have any training. If only I had something of his, something like his own hair, that I could use against him. Maybe I should have checked the bathroom at Monica's. But I had the feeling he wouldn't be that careless. Anyone who spends time thinking about how to use that sort of thing against people is going to be doubly paranoid that no one have the opportunity to use it against him. And then it struck me. I did have something of Victor's. I had his scorpion talisman back in the drawer of my desk in the office. It was one of his own devices, something close and familiar. I could use it to create a bond to him, to sort of judo his own power back against him and beat him with it. Hands down, no questions asked. I might have a chance yet. I wasn't finished, not by a long shot. The cabbie pulled into a gas station parked next to the payphone. I told him to wait for a minute and got out, fumbling a quarter from my pockets to make the call. If it did turn out that I wouldn't live to see tomorrow, I wanted to make damn sure that the hounds of hell would be growling at Victor Sells' heels. I dialed Murphy's number down at the station. It rang several times, and finally someone answered. The line was scratchy, noisy. I could barely make out who it was. Murphy's desk, this is Carmichael. Carmichael, I said loudly into the phone. It's Harry Dresden. I need to talk to Murphy. What? Carmichael said. There was a squeal of static. Damn it, the phones go to hell on me at the worst times. I can't hear you. Murphy? You want Murphy? Who is this? Anderson, is that you? It's Harry Dresden, I shouted. I need to talk to Murphy. Ah, Carmichael grunted. I can't hear you, Andy. Look, Murphy's out. She took that warrant down to Harry Dresden's office to take a look around. She what? I said. Harry Dresden's office, Carmichael said. She said she'd be back soon. Look, this connection is awful. Try calling back. He hung up on me. I fumbled for another quarter, my hands shaking, and dialed my own office number. The last thing I needed was for Murphy to go poking around my office, maybe impounding things. If she stuck the scorpion in evidence, I was done for. I'd never be able to explain it to her in time. And if she saw me face to face, she might be furious enough with me just to have me slapped into holding and left there overnight. If that happened, I'd be dead by morning. My phone rang a couple of times, then Murphy answered. The line was blissfully clear. Harry Dresden's office. Murph, I said. Thank God. Look, I need to talk to you. I could practically feel her anger. Too late for that now, Harry. You should have come to talk to me this morning. I heard her moving around. She started opening drawers. Damn it, Murph, I said, frustrated. I know who the killer is. Look, you've got to keep out of that desk. It could be dangerous. I thought I'd been going to tell her a lie, but I realized, as I said it, that I was telling the truth. I remembered seeing, or thinking I had seen, movement from the talisman when I examined it before. Maybe I hadn't been imagining things. Dangerous, Murphy growled. I heard her scattering pens about the top drawer of my desk, moving things around. The talisman was in the drawer beneath. I'll tell you what's dangerous. Fucking with me is dangerous, Dresden. I'm not playing some kind of game here, and I can't trust what you say anymore. Murphy, I said, trying to keep my voice even, you've got to trust me. One more time. Stay out of my desk, please. There was silence for a moment. I heard her draw a breath and let it out through her mouth. Then Murphy said, her voice hard, professional, why, Dresden, what are you hiding? I heard her open the middle drawer. There was a clicking sound and a startled oath from Murphy. The receiver clattered to the floor. I heard gunshots, shockingly loud, whining ricochets, and then a scream. Damn it, I shouted at the phone. Murphy! I slammed the phone down and sprinted back to the cab. The cabbie blinked at me. Hey, buddy, where's the fire? I slammed the door shut and gave him the address to my office. Then I thrust all of my remaining cash at him and said, get me there 5 minutes ago. The cabbie blinked at the money, shrugged, and said, crazy. Cabbies get all the crazies. Then he tore out into the street, leaving a cloud of smoke behind us.